Hey, I'm Danny Levy, and you're listening to Digital Transformation and Leadership. This is the show where we go behind the scenes with today's top business leaders to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. This week, I'm joined by Paul Harapin, head of Asia Pacific and Japan at Stripe. Paul, welcome to Digital Transformation and Leadership.
Thanks, Danny. Great to be here.
So just before we start, would you be able to quickly introduce yourself and what it is you're doing?
Yeah, I Paul Harapin, I run revenue and growth for Stripe across Asia Pacific, Japan. What that means, if you look at an organization like us, we develop product and then we take it to market. So I run the part of the organization that takes our solutions to market across the region, and that's everywhere from Australia through to Japan, India, through to China, Southeast Asia, and so on.
Fantastic. And you've recently moved to Singapore. I guess you've moved over during the midst of the pandemic when we're recording this, or coming out of the pandemic. And how have you found it so far?
Yeah, people ask me that question, how Singapore treating you? I said, I hardly leave my apartment.
Yeah.
Our offices are closed. My life is on Zoom. So Singapore's fine. I'm not really experiencing the full scope of what Singapore has to offer, but it's my second time here. I moved here in 1997 for the first time and lived for 4 years. And certainly, whilst I've always come to Singapore over that period of time, it certainly changed a lot as a country, and not just the infrastructure, but the social side of things as well. So it's something I'm looking forward to taking advantage of once we're less restricted.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when the restrictions ease, we'll try and meet up in a group of more than two people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
And before you moved to Singapore, you were the chairman of a mental health charity in Australia. Just before we get into the main topic today, I just wondered, it'd be great maybe if you could share with the listeners what you think is one of the biggest misconceptions when it comes to mental health in men.
Yeah, look, I think one of the areas that people typically talk about is, you know, men are tough and, you know, they'll deal with it, and, you know, they don't need to talk about their problems and so on. And in fact, the exact opposite is true. Women tend to do these things just very naturally.
Yeah.
Men will always default to talking about the football or, you know, the cricket, the rugby, whatever's happened on the weekend, etc. But what COVID's taught me, and also being part of my charity, is that if you provide the opportunity, men will definitely be very open. I was very lucky. I've got a great group of high school mates, and you know, we're reasonably close. And during COVID, that became even more so, both on WhatsApp chats, or we started, when I was back in Sydney, we'd go walking once a week around the Centennial Park there, and it provided an opportunity for everyone to really ask, "How are you doing?" You know, really, how are you doing? And, you know, we had the normal sports conversations and jokes and everything else, but we also had a lot of serious conversations, and it was fantastic. And even now, here in Singapore, I can reach out to them and say, "Guys, who's up for a Zoom chat?" Mm-hmm. And, you know, whoever's available will jump on, because sometimes you just need to, you need to chat. So I think what a lot of charities and support groups are trying to do is provide that mechanism for men to outreach with only the purpose of support and outreach, not anything else. And if you do that, it's amazing how helpful that is. You know, I'm sure you know yourself, if you're just able to get things off your chest with someone, particularly a trusted friend or someone, you know, in a support group, it makes the world of difference, because you start to realize it's not just you. Everyone has challenges. Doesn't matter if you're the leader of a country, or, you know, you're someone, you know, younger at school. Everyone has challenges they have to deal with, and it's just having the right support around you whilst you're going through those challenges, be they just a blip or something that's, you know, continues on, that support makes a huge difference. So, you know, if you think something's not right, don't accept, I'm good. Ask deeper questions and really, you know, try and get to the source of things. Because if you do, people tend to open up, and that's where you make a difference.
There's the challenge there, isn't there, where it can become a bit of a throwaway term, can't it? Where even when you're in your friend's circle, you say, you know, how are you doing? And yeah, good, I'm really good. And you? Yeah, I'm good. And then you kind of go on to another topic of conversation, don't you? And you kind of forget about it until you may be back on your own again later in the day.
Exactly. And it's part of really asking the right questions. You know, if you ask the right questions, people will respond. Mm. If you just ask, how are you going? And people say, yeah, I'm good. And then you move on. Well, that's a greeting. It's not a quest. It's not a real question. You have to ask the question wanting to know the answer. In which case you'll pick up on the right things to ask. And that's really the key. One of the things we did at my charity is we were training people on those questions. How do you ask those questions? Not just in one of the support groups we ran, but also we were training people in a corporate environment. You know, when COVID hit, a lot of people were challenged. And so being able to go beyond just the peripheral, you know, high level, how are you doing question, not everyone has the skills for that. And so that's what we were working on as a charity.
Yeah, makes sense. So the topic we're going to get into today, it's on the centrality of customer experience in attaining growth for Asian retailers. We've got several points we're going to talk through, really, really exciting, really timely topic. But before we go into the points, I wondered if you could kick us off with explaining why CX is now more important than ever when it comes to retail.
Well, I think we've had a generational shift in retail environments. In fact, in everything that we do, COVID has driven a change that is something we would never have expected or planned for. I mean, if you go back 2 years and say someone said to you, hey, we're just not going to go to the office for the next 2 years. We'll just do everything via video conference, including our internal meetings and our customer calls and our sales prospecting calls. And we're not even going to go to the supermarket now. We're just going to buy all of those things online. Maybe we'll pop in occasionally to get some fresh fruit, but everything else we'll sort of do online, including including your parents will be doing that as well. You would have just laughed.
Yeah.
And this generational shift has meant that the growth of online commerce, particularly in retail, has gone through the roof. What that means now is there's more and more organizations that are online, more and more competitive environments. It's all happening on mobile. And so if your CX and the experience you provide your customers isn't optimized, they're gone really quickly. And transactions happen fast. If there's friction in that process, you've lost that transaction. And so the importance and criticality of the right CX on the right platform has never been so important, because people aren't coming online now to buy that one product, and they don't mind spending time on it if it's not exactly perfect. They're doing everything online, and they know the experience. And if you provide friction and the CX isn't exactly optimized, you lose that transaction, and you may lose that customer forever. So that's why it's really critical for organizations to get this right.
Yeah, I think we're becoming, especially through COVID, us as consumers and the other consumers as well, I'm sure, are in the same boat, but we've become so impatient, haven't we, when it comes to the online experience. We need something to load yesterday. When we go through the process, we expect it to be intuitive and We don't want any downtime when it comes to payments or the items arriving. It's just the expectations now are huge, aren't they?
They are, and we're also doing more than half of our buying on our mobile phones.
Mm.
And organizations will set up a pretty website and then not optimize for the mobile experience. And if more than 50% of your customers are engaging by mobile, and that's even greater in countries like, you know, around Southeast Asia.
Mm.
But even I do almost everything on my phone. If that experience isn't optimized, then again, you've provided a friction point where the customer's impatience just makes them go to another source. And there's so many different retailers that if one is not the best experience, you can flip very easily to the next one. So that impatience is also driving the importance of CX, because you don't have long. We're talking seconds, and the interruption to that process, you're gone. You've been distracted. You know, something's come on TV, the wife or kids have called out, and you've moved on and you've forgotten about the transaction and you don't come back.
Yeah. Is there a benchmark for you when you think of kind of modern day mobile kind of internet retail? Is there a benchmark of retailer where you just think that their experience is just awesome across the different touch points, and, you know, pre-sale, during the sale, after sale?
Yeah, look, I think it depends on, you know, what you're buying, what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
If I give you a simple example, we work with a company called Flower Chim.
Okay.
out of Malaysia, and they've been really focused on the customer experience. So as they worked with us to optimize that checkout so that it happens as rapidly as possible, they've also seen almost 40% increase on conversion to business.
Wow.
So you think about that, a company that's already in business, going along, doing their own thing, simply works with Stripe to optimize what they're doing, and very quickly they've seen a 40% boost to their mobile checkout rate. I call it capturing the transaction at the point of excitement.
Okay.
When you're excited enough to be on a site trying to buy something, you want to buy it. So basically the point that you go to the cart and say, I want to buy, you want that to be as frictionless as possible. And, you know, one click is great, but, you know, an optimized quick experience. So once the customer's at the point of excitement, if you then start to introduce points of frustration,
yeah,
that excitement can go really quickly, particularly if it may be an impulse purchase for whatever reason. And so you want to ensure that the checkout's rapid, the experience is seamless, you're not being asked to re-enter details multiple times, contact your, you know, card provider. You want to be able to provide the right payment method at mm-hmm. the right time. More and more we're seeing things like buy now, pay later. And yep, that experience also, if you don't have what the customer is expecting, you can lose them. As well as having the right experience and increasing sales. We found since customers started using Afterpay as a payment method with Stripe,
mm-hmm.
they've seen two things happen. They've seen an average 27% increase in conversions. And importantly, those conversions have had an average 40% basket size increase. Simply by having the right payment method available for the consumer as they go to buy. So you can see how important that last part of the experience is. Once you've shopped, you just want to buy.
Yeah.
And you want to buy how you want to buy, and you want to buy quickly. So that's a bit of an overview of how that checkout and the customer experience overall is really critical.
Yeah, love that. The highest intent to purchase. I mean, you've just got to capture them in that moment, haven't you? If you mess that up, it's such a shame. And you potentially go from a repeat or longer term customer to just losing them forever, don't they? It's that quick now.
You do.
Yeah.
And you know, the study we did recently showed that 9 out of 10 sales are lost at that checkout. Mm. Right, 9 out of 10. So you don't get that right, you're just losing a lot of business. And like I said, it may not just be the transaction, it may be the customer overall doesn't come back.
Yeah. You mentioned, Paul, you mentioned buy now, pay later there, and the partnership you've got with Afterpay. It's coming up more and more on interviews I do for the podcast, on the research we do for the company. What's your opinion on buy now, pay later as it kind of pertains to retail?
Well, I think it's becoming a hugely important part of the consumer experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we work with Afterpay and Zip and Klarna and yep. Atomi and others, and all consumers are looking for that different experience, and they're all slightly different, but mm-hmm. I see also a lot of the younger generation coming through using buy now, pay later.
Yeah.
So the younger people tend not to have credit cards as much.
Mm-hmm.
In different countries, credit cards aren't the most popular option. In Australia, very, very common. Singapore, very common. Not so much in some other countries.
Mm.
And even in Australia, the buy now, pay later growth is being fueled by the younger generation. Not that older generations aren't yeah. using it as well, but they have many more options. And so I think buy now, pay later has hit an inflection point of being able to take a transaction, pay over installments, have a really simplified experience without having to go and apply for, you know, credit cards and, you know, leverage amounts and, you know, interest rates and take all of those things into consideration. Buy now, pay later just again goes to that customer experience. They've made it simple, and I think that's why you've seen the growth of that globally. I mean, it's yeah. really just a lot of the organizations have started out of Australia for, you know, some historical reasons of how this used to be in retail, the lay-by, where you would go into the store, you would say, I want to buy something. They would put it in the back room and you'd pay them an amount and come mm-hmm. back regularly until you'd paid it off. And so you've seen the Afterpays and Zips and Hum and a whole range of others all come out of Australia. And then it's started to expand in every country as well.
Yeah. I guess the difference is on lay-by, you didn't get it until it was paid off, whereas now you've got that instant gratification. You get the item and you pay it off as you use it, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And it does make things, I mean, it just increases, as you mentioned before, doesn't it? That kind of impulse or highest intent to purchase, doesn't it? Because if you're going to purchase, say, an item, maybe like a phone or something that would cost you $1,000, but you can break that up into smaller payments over 12 months, that's something that's then quite manageable, isn't it?
Yeah. And really important, because again, as I say, the younger generation are often working, you know, in cafes and pubs and things like that, and they get their money every week, and so it helps with cash flow as well. So there's a whole range of reasons why it's become a really popular method of payment, and we're seeing that across every country in the world.
Yeah. And interest-free, I think, as well. I think the younger generation often have a bit of a problem, don't they, where they've got to pay the high amounts of interest back to the credit card companies, and this kind of gets around that.
It does. Yeah. And, you know, if you don't pay, then they don't allow you to transact until that's paid. So it's almost a gate in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, for Stripe, it's about enabling our users to provide the right payment method for the right consumer, whether that's, you know, credit card, a wallet like GrabPay or Shopee Pay, or it's buy now, pay later. Let's make sure that the customer, as they are about to purchase, has the right method for them.
businesses of all shapes and sizes choose Stripe as their payments platform to gain a competitive advantage. With Stripe, you can easily optimize your conversion rates, simplify your expansion plans, protect yourself against fraud, and future-proof your business. Those are just a few of the reasons why retailers like The Iconic, Carousel, and Shopify look to Stripe to power their payments. Whereas legacy payments technology will slow you down in a fast-changing world, modern payments technology can help you speed up and stay ahead of the curve. It's no surprise then that Stripe ranked as the highest for strategy and current offering in the 2020 Forrester Wave report on merchant payment providers. So whether you're an online or in-person retailer, software platform, marketplace, or subscriptions business, visit stripe.com to learn more about how Stripe can support your business today. That's stripe.com to learn more and get started today. And when you work with retailers, in terms of payment methods, what's the kind of, I mean, how do you go about helping them decide the optimal mix? Because there's so many different ways that you can pay now. I guess you don't want to give people too many options, or do you? It'd just be great if you could unpack that a bit for me and the listeners.
Yeah, it depends on the country, because some countries have a whole range of payment methods and others don't. And so what Stripe does is we enable the merchant to decide what payment method they add to their site. Mm-hmm. And then once it's added, we can also optimize how it's presented based on, you know, previous behavior. Remember that probably 70% of people have transacted on a platform that uses Stripe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can see some of those trends that come up, and we say, well, if it's this type of transaction in this type of country, potentially this wallet is the preferred method, so that will be there. But the merchant has the opportunity to switch payment methods on and off.
Okay.
They can try something, they can take it off. I think at the end of the day, all things being equal, you want to provide the maximum number of payment methods without it becoming overwhelming for the consumer. So again, the design of how that looks and the checkout needs to be simple, but you need to be able to manage the major methods, which these days tend to be cards, wallets, buy now, pay laters.
And is it this last point, the payment process, where most businesses actually lose out on revenue, or is it something different that you see from when you're working with retailers?
It can be a range of factors. You know, if your site isn't designed the right way, you don't present the products the right way, you can have issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we commonly see that the checkout process, as I was mentioning, once you've decided to buy and you've finished your shopping, that can be where the complexities come in. You know, if we look at the study we did recently, we see that 95% of the top e-commerce sites in Asia had at least five basic errors that caused friction in that process. And as I mentioned before, 9 out of 10 sales are lost at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if your website's not designed properly and your customers don't like the products, well, they're not going to get to that point anyway. But once they're there, that's when you really need to optimize. And that's, again, providing the right payment methods, making sure that you're optimized for the platform that your customers are engaging with you on, particularly mobile, as it becomes more and more the way that people buy. So if you haven't optimized for your mobile checkout and it's clunky, you'll lose customers there. And, you know, all of those payment methods, be it Apple Pay or Google Pay, WeChat Pay, buy now, pay laters, etc., you know, offer the most popular payment methods for the country that you're in. And, you know, part of what Stripe does is really help their customers, or help our customers, optimize locally and expand globally.
Okay.
And so those payment methods for your experience in Singapore may be you want to be totally different for your customers in Japan.
Yeah.
And so we're able to help you get that optimization for the country that you're in.
Yeah. So Stripe has that expertise that as you scale up and you go cross-border, the retailer can come to you and you can then give advice and recommendations on which new payment services or integrations they can use as they go into these new markets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, we're working with so many organizations that, you know, we're seeing what works, what doesn't work, different countries, different demographics, different industries. And so we're always happy to engage, obviously not just on our platform, but how to get the best out of it to optimize what you're doing, potentially drive new revenue streams. Mm-hmm. You know, our platform is tremendously functional, whether it's just providing a simple checkout, whether it's recurring complex billing cycles that you need.
Mm-hmm.
Managing fraud, obviously, is critical in this process as well. So that's something that we focus on a tremendous amount. And then also the back office for a lot of organizations. You know, I like to say to retailers, you focus on your front office. Your mm-hmm. front office is the goods and services that you're trying to sell to your consumers, and work with Stripe to focus on the back office part. Global payments is an extremely complex thing to get your head around. Stripe's built our whole organization on simplifying that and taking the complexity away from our users and our merchants. And so let us focus on that complexity and you focus on your products and services. And that partnership ends up being extremely fruitful for our users.
And that's exactly what you want from a partner as well, isn't it? You want a partner that can take care of the stuff that you're not so good at, and you can lean on their experience and their expertise, and then you can just get on and do exactly what you should be doing, which is on focusing on how you can, you know, grow and scale and deliver the best products to your customers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, unless you see particular competitive advantage in something that you want to do it yourself,
mm-hmm.
then get the specialists to do it. And as I said, payments just in one country is a complex thing. Payments globally is even more complex because you're dealing with different payment methods, different regulatory environments, the whole thing. And Stripe enabling you to switch on countries, switch on payment methods just through integrating with our platform brings a whole range of business opportunities and reduces tremendous amount of cost and complexity from the business. And you know, and unless you really want to become an expert in the global payment area, mm-hmm. then you know, and if you do, good luck. if you really want to focus on what you're doing and what you're selling and providing a fantastic experience to your customers as they engage with you, then you know, Stripe's here to help do that as quickly and as optimally as possible, so that you have every chance of not only ensuring your customers transact quickly with you, but they mm-hmm. come back and they transact more because they know your experience is a great one. And when they want to buy, they can buy, and it's as simple as possible.
Yeah, I love that. And when you're working with retailers, with companies, do you find that some of them do fall into the trap of maybe not putting customers at the center of their operations?
I don't think intentionally.
Okay.
Sometimes you can see organizations get caught up in their product and maybe don't put as much thought, or sometimes it's just unintentional. You know, it's not that someone's trying to provide a difficult checkout experience, but if they're trying to manage all of that themselves and understand it when, you know, their expertise is in retail,
mm-hmm.
That's where you get the unintended consequence of not necessarily putting the customer at the the center point of what you're trying to do. And that really is absolutely critical, right? Because shoppers want a great experience on the site, and they want an optimized way of being able to buy whatever it is that they're engaging with you on. And so I don't think anyone's intentionally trying to provide a bad experience. Yeah. But like I said, if 95% of the top sites have at least five basic errors in their checkout, then it's much more common than it's not. So again, that's why bring in the experts and we'll help manage that to give you the best outcome possible.
Yeah. And do you think it is when you're not an expert, like you've said, and you know, you're doing something that isn't totally comfortable for you, it's very easy, isn't it, to start to overcomplicate things without actually wanting to overcomplicate them? And then when you bring in an expert, someone like Stripe, they can simplify things and make it much easier for you quite quickly.
Yeah, there's so many things that you have to think about. Mm. You know, I mentioned some, which is, you know, what are the right payment methods for the right countries? What are the services that I'm trying to sell? And is it a straight purchase? Is it a subscription model? Mm-hmm. Is this a fraudulent transaction? And how do I keep my eye on that? Because, you know, the more we go online, the more that fraudsters follow. And so there's so many things to take into account. And frankly, so much is changing so quickly. There's always a new payment method. There's always a new regulation. Mm. It's hard to keep up with when this is all you do, let alone if it's just part of what you do. Admittedly, an extremely important part, right? The whole financial transaction is critical to what everyone does, but it's not necessarily everyone's core business. And so trying to keep up with all of the fast-paced movement across global financial services is really complex, even for those of us that live and breathe this every day. So that's why I say, and some things are important enough to have the experts work with you. You understand what you need to understand, so you mm-hmm. can provide the right experience. But you know, we live and breathe ensuring that our users' businesses grow. And so call on Stripe to help with that, because it is a complicated area, and you need to generally focus on the products and services that you're selling, and it's our job to help you ensure that they get sold when the customer wants to buy.
Yeah, makes sense. And so for companies listening to this, What are the kind of recommendations or the kind of steps that you recommend they take to kind of put customers more at the center or refocus and you know, get back into really driving growth?
First of all, you know, I've mentioned the checkout experience. Mm-hmm. So how do they ensure that their customers buy when they need to buy, via whatever payment method, via whatever platform is absolutely critical for them to buy through?
Yeah.
And that the experience is fast and intuitive and provides a method for organizations and users to transact as they need to. Also, there's a lot of data that's being collected as well. Yeah. And this is where retailers can start to take advantage of the data that they find within their business from mm-hmm. Stripe and others. What works well from a checkout experience? What product at what time sells more? What demographic is involved based on your customer engagement? And so as data becomes more and more important, that's something that retailers should be really focused on. You see more and more look at loyalty programs and other things to gather that data. That all ties back to giving a consumer the right experience, so that you have customized recommendations, products that come to you because they know that this is something that you would like. I mean, Amazon's done this extremely well for years. Mm-hmm. You know, customer, you're looking to buy this, and customers who have bought this have also bought these things, and those recommendations are really positive, whether you decide to buy those or not. Some of the really important things that I think organizations should focus on.
Yeah, great recommendations. I think the data point in it specifically, isn't it? If you've got to be acting on that data, it's not just a collection exercise. Otherwise, it's quite pointless, isn't it? If companies are just collecting
exactly.
the data.
Yeah, it's if you're collecting the data, how do you then start to leverage it? To obviously, the goal is to grow your business, but you grow your business by providing your customers a better experience, and there's a range of things that impact that, and the right product recommendation at the right time, mm-hmm. you know, the right offer, etc., can all work to make sure that works really well.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And just one point as well, you mentioned, which was around fraud, which we didn't get into too much. When I think fraud is often one of those things that it affects all businesses, especially, you know, can hit you very hard. Is there anything you're seeing at the moment in Asia when it comes to fraud, or anything you're helping retailers overcome there?
Yeah, we're not specific to Asia. I think it's a problem that we see everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, we look at some of these behaviors, and we've seen that, you know, around 10% of consumers will abandon a transaction because they don't feel that it's secure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on the consumer side. But on the industry side, there's also the threat of fraudsters, you know, obviously doing the wrong thing from a transactional perspective, stealing mm-hmm. data. All of these things can hurt a brand, a brand's reputation. We've also heard from our customers that over a third have started experiencing increased fraud attempts.
Mm-hmm.
So again, as everyone's rushing online, so are the fraudsters.
Yeah.
We see also that around a quarter have seen even more sophisticated fraud attempts. So it's not just the simple, I'm trying to use a stolen credit card.
Mm.
A lot of them are very, very sophisticated in yeah. how they approach things. And Stripe's built a global machine learning AI
okay.
Platform that we use to monitor everything that's going on across all the transactions. Because it's not just the transaction on your website. That same fraudster could be trying something somewhere else, different country, different site. And so, you know, we're monitoring, you know, millions and millions of transactions per second to try and keep ahead of all of this. And so we see it with our customers that, you know, the vast majority, you know, well over two thirds are working with us to improve fraud detection, mitigate potential issues. Because again, it's not everyone who's in retail is a fraud expert. So, you know, setting up your site and engaging a way to pay is one thing, but again, there's more stringent methods that you can take, and part of the Stripe platform is focused on fraud mitigation and management as well.
Yeah, you need to have that big investment, don't you, that team that look at it, the AI, the machine learning you mentioned, because the fraudsters, I would imagine, in the same way are sitting around and trying to develop, you know, equally complex measures to take advantage of vulnerabilities, and they're only getting more advanced as well, aren't they, every day?
Exactly. As all the technology improves and you solve one problem, someone smart will develop another methodology, and you know, trying to manage all of that with a set of eyes is very difficult. So, but we manage it, and we're learning from it through our radar technology, which is, you know, just a massively scalable engine that's monitoring all of these transactions. As I said, in a lot of countries across Asia, US, and Europe, we see a very, very large percentage of online commerce transactions happening across Stripe.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a pretty good data set to be able to understand what's happening and work with our customers to mitigate as much as possible. Having said that, you don't want it to be so stringent that you're not allowing real customers to get through. And I've seen organizations that have had that experience as well, where you go, hang on a sec, why is this transaction not going through? I'm being rejected.
And that can be a friction point as well, can't it? Like you mentioned earlier.
It's a friction point, yeah. And if it's not a real friction, if it's not a real fraud attempt, you can imagine it's very frustrating for the consumer. So it's that fine balance of ensuring that if something looks like it's wrong, that it's managed properly. And, at Stripe, we're able to look at a range of transactions, and something that may be rejected by a bank, actually Stripe's able to manage it through, because we look at a whole range of factors globally that allow that transaction to go through, because it had some aspects of what could be picked up if you're looking at fraud from like a top 10 checklist perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Versus how we look at fraud, which is on a millions of data point perspective. And you go, well, actually, yeah, tick some of those boxes, but we've seen this behavior before, and that's fine. So we let that through. So again, it's all about optimizing the experience, and that happens at sub-second response. So the consumer doesn't even notice that that's happened, but they sure notice if the transaction doesn't get through. And, most people don't hang around to, sit on the phone trying to get a hold of their bank to understand what's happened. They just move on.
Yeah.
Again, really important overall for both the customer experience, but also the merchant retailer experience. Because, the last thing you want is to do all that hard work and have fraud, ruin pieces of it.
Yeah. Completely agree. Paul, I've really enjoyed talking to you today about customer experience, putting it at the center of everything you do for retail, and talking through some of these points around where businesses are losing critical revenue, why it's so important to put customers at the center of your operations, and some of the different steps companies and businesses can take to ensure CX put at the center and attaining growth and talking around fraud as well. Really got a lot of value out of the episode, so thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks Danny, it's been great. We look at COVID and see the vast generational shift online.
Yeah.
And the revenues probably doubled this year. We expect it to be a $2 trillion market over the next 3 or 4 years in Asia Pacific, but globally still only just above 10% of commerce happens online. So there's a long way to go. We've made that generational shift, so it's really exciting to be at the core of that. And Asia Pacific is a super exciting region to be working in, because there's just a vast amount of innovation happening here, which is really exciting.
It definitely is. It's something new happening every single day, isn't there? So it's a wonderful industry to be involved in. Paul, just to round off, I always like to ask my guests if they could share one life lesson with the listeners.
Look, I've probably got a few. trying to think of what would be relevant to the listeners, and particularly as you're going online and so on, and a sort of a two-part answer. One is preparation and focus. Really, I learned the lesson from my mentors early on is focus on what you're trying to do and be as well prepared for that as you possibly can. Whatever it is that you're doing, as you listen to this podcast, whether it's, you're about to go into a meeting with a venture capitalist to raise some money, or you're trying to do, a deal with a large organization, or just a prospecting sales call, be prepared and be really focused. And, the other is look after your users, your consumers, mm-hmm. your customers. Because if you do that and you're very centric to their needs, without compromising what you need to do, that doesn't mean, you know, you have to be the whipping boy.
Yeah.
But you be very customer centric means that you're always thinking about how to make the experience with your consumers better. And so if you're well prepared, you're focused on your customers, your chances of being successful are greatly increased. That's what I've learned over my career, and hopefully that adds some values to the listeners.
I absolutely love those two points. I'm nodding my head here, but you can't see me. But I completely agree. Yeah, that focus and that starting everything you do with a customer lens. I mean, it's just paramount, isn't it, to success?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I'd learned that through my career, and at Stripe, it's probably our number one principle as an organization is to be user first, and really, you know, we're not successful. The quiet fact is Stripe is not successful if our customers aren't successful. We're not selling something that you buy and we've got our money and we go. We actually don't make any money unless you're transacting. So the more successful your business is, the more successful Stripe is. And so that's why we're extremely user-focused, because mm-hmm. your success is our success. And so it's a great relationship to have for us, and particularly on the merchant side, because, you know, if we're not doing the right thing, we won't be getting your business. And that's a great buyer-merchant relationship.
Fantastic. Paul, again, I've really, really enjoyed the conversation today. How can people get in touch if they want to find out more from you?
If they want to find more, just go to stripe.com. You'll see all the relevant information there, or reach out to me on LinkedIn. Happy to engage personally as well for anyone that needs any support or just wants some more information.
Fantastic. We'll put those two links in the show notes as well to make it as easy as possible for everyone. Paul, thank you so much for coming on digital transformation and leadership and sharing your insights and wisdom with the listeners. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks, Danny. I really appreciate you having me on, and I love your podcast, by the way. So I'm not through all of them, but I've certainly enjoyed the ones that I've listened to.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Digital Transformation and Leadership. If you're enjoying the show, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. No need to leave a written review, just clicking on the 5 stars is enough. I'd really appreciate it, as it helps the show get found and it helps those listener numbers grow. And we'll be back again next week, when we will again go behind the scenes with another top business leader to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. The Digital Transformation and Leadership Podcast is a Blue Aurora Media production.